This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My plan, my business plan, is to go to Radio Row, like hawking some product, but alter my Wikipedia page right before I go to where it says I was 7-time All-Pro, 2-time Super Bowl champion, something like that. Because what happens is, somebody will say, a publicist will say, hey, do you want to have Seth Payne on? And they're like, hold on a second, who's Seth Payne? And they'll look at it and they'll say, oh, he actually played in two of these things. Then we'll ask him his experience about that.
And just ride it out until the Wikipedia people find out that it's a lie?
Yeah, well, yeah, just ride it out until I've sold all of my concussion tonic or whatever I call it, yeah.
It's a good plan.
Dr. Copeland Payne's concussion water, and there we go.
It's Wikipedia. It's not perjury or anything. It's the internet. It's the wild, wild west.
We did it one year. I was at Radio Row, and I went on with the Tennessee guys with my new frenemy. What's his name from Tennessee? The football writer there.
Oh, Kuharski.
Paul Kuharski.
Yeah.
We're frenemies. We're more friends than anything, but I had an issue with one thing that he wrote about the Astros. Well, I went at him on. He came at me on Twitter, and I had to shut him down quickly.
Okay,
yeah,
good for you.
That's the only time we've ever had any kind of negative exchange.
Okay.
But the Astros will anger me.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was on with them, and I'll get angry defending the Astros.
Right.
I was on with them, and I just joked with the listeners like, you guys should go on and edit my Wikipedia. And within 10 minutes, they went too far. I wanted it to be kind of an achievable, a little lie that somebody might not realize. Like, oh, I didn't know that about.
Were all the lies football related?
It turned into.
They give you a sex tape? No.
It was mostly just that I was named defensive rookie of the year. I was a 10-time All Pro. All this stuff that was definitely a lie. I wanted them to just tweak it a little bit.
Right.
Just add a little bit of glory.
It would have been great if just in that little window where that stuff was up there, you had some nerd like I am. Sometimes I get into these little, you know, these internet wormholes or whatever that happen to stumble across your page for some reason. Like, how is this guy not in the Hall of Fame?
You write an article
about
it. He's
a 10-time All-Pro. Right. Here's the omission that's the real tragic omission in the Hall of Fame.
The stuff, the bigger topics generally get edited out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You can go on to like Seth Payne's Wikipedia page and change it, and it's going to be a while before somebody reports it. You know?
My favorite Wikipedia change, and we're going to get into the changes the Texans made to their organization yesterday in just a second. My favorite one is when people go into a team's Wikipedia page and change the owner to the name of a player that just had a dominant performance.
Right.
Like when James Harden scored 60 against the Knicks, somebody goes into the Wikipedia page for the New York Knicks, puts owner James Harden.
Yeah. Those are good.
That's always
you
got to
screen cap that quickly.
Yeah.
You can't sit around admiring your handiwork.
You can't.
You got to take that trophy right quick.
The Wikipedia police.
Yeah.
So yesterday, and we'll get to Dusty Baker here in this segment as well. We got a nice long segment for you here. So yesterday, the Texans, in addition to naming Bill O'Brien officially the general manager, Jack Easterby officially the executive vice president in charge of football operations, they made some more changes to the organization. These are changes that again, they're with a lot of folks who people probably don't know. I'll be honest with you. Most of the folks that were part of this purge yesterday, well, I don't know who they are other than your former teammate, J.J. Moses,
right,
who might be the nicest person on the face of God's green earth.
I mean, one of the nicest people and then also one of the most positive people I've ever met.
He's incredibly
positive. And like a genuinely awesome, positive person who did take the player engagement program for the Texans.
And that was his title, right? Director of Player
Engagement? Yeah. So that's he runs a lot of programs for, you know, getting guys to go back and finish their degrees. Just kind of some of the player improvement things and programs, a lot of the stuff they do, the educational seminars. He was hired 2 years ago officially in that role, and he'd done a lot of work with the team before that, but he was hired officially in 2 years ago, and they were below average, not awful, but below average in terms of how many players actually utilize the services. This past year, they were the number one in terms of player engagement. That's not just like some popularity contest. It was by that's an objective measure that they use by based on how many people are utilizing the program, feedback from the players, all that stuff. And the Texans were the number one. So this was, to put it simply, far outpacing any other objective measure on the Texans last year.
Right.
The offense, which was about 20th in DVOA, the defense, which was near dead last. Look, you made changes there, but yeah, J.J. Moses, who, if anything, I would guess the biggest issue with J.J. Moses would have been one of these things where O'Brien either has somebody else in mind that he wants to bring in, or it was just that JJ was too positive. maybe JJ was in there actually trying to get people going on a Monday where O'Brien wants it to feel like a morgue on a Monday. I have no idea. But I could see that sometimes old school coaches like Bill O'Brien or guys that are kind of wannabe old school guys, they don't like it when people are actually mentally healthy and getting ready for the next opponent.
Right.
They want them to be depressed for at least a good 48
hours.
Yeah,
the people
before.
That point out that the sun came up today are bad people.
I always heard stories about these guys, some of these coaches like Pete Carroll and Jeff Fisher, where they would talk about the 24-hour rule and they would genuinely mean it. That, hey, by the time you show up for work tomorrow, we're ready to go. We're on to next week. We just got to be ready, and there'd be like kind of a fun, loose environment. I never played for a coach like that.
Okay, so
but they do exist.
So what you're saying is that they have the rule that you come in and you come in with the outlook that maybe a J.J. Moses might have had, whereas there are a lot of coaches out there that feel like part of the process of losing is wallowing in the losing
right.
for a little while.
Because
you want it to hurt?
And somebody explained this to me, because I used to be that guy too. I used to feel that was very important to let the world know like how upset you are, because, hey, I'm a big, tough football player, right? And I care.
I think a lot of fans kind of want...
And the fans
I think there are a lot of fans that feel that
which
way.
Which is fine. That's like on the field after the game. I totally get that. Yeah. And you are personally distraught about
right.
it. But I had a guy that actually works with a lot of tennis players and golfers back in Orlando. I could remember that. I think it's James Lair. He's a sports psychologist. He broke it down to me when I was about in my fourth year in the league. And he said, you know, a lot of the tantrums that people throw, a lot of just acting like showing the world, it's really just your own insecurity needing to show the rest of the world like how much you care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, look at me. Look at me. Look at how serious I take it. When it's not necessarily actually the most productive way to get moving
right.
on into the next week. Likewise, same thing with, you know, we talk about keeping an even keel. Enjoying the victory a little too much and getting too a little high on the hog, then there can be a refractory period from that. Anyway, it was just weird that JJ did so well with the program and then just got axed for
named it. Literally the best player engagement program in the league.
Yeah, and I know...
Was he brought in by Brian Gain?
He was brought in by Brian Gain, and that was Brian Gain's goal, was to be the number one player engagement. That was one of his goals, was to be number one in terms of player engagement, and then JJ wasn't. The interesting thing is that JJ kind of had the role in a lot of respects that Jack Easterby had with the Patriots.
That's a good
supposed
point.
To be a guy that's helping out. I do wonder, and I brought this up at the time, if Easterby thinks that guys are going to trust him, well, he's also the guy that's making all the personnel decisions and everything, to come and talk to Easterby about your personal problems and everything, then they must want a lot of dumbasses on their team, because that's not the guy. I'm not going to go to Charlie Casserly and be like, hey, Charlie, here's everything that's wrong in my life right now. Can you help me fix it?
Here's what's distracting me from the one singular thing you want me to be, which is a good football player.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's a conflict of interest there.
Yeah.
But maybe, whatever. I don't know. I'm very personally biased. Like, honestly, JJ's one of these people that when you first meet him, you're like, oh, he can't actually be this positive, can he? Well, yeah, he can, and that's how he made it in the NFL as a 5'6" kick returner.
Is it a shock that the dude that was screaming down a fan on the way back under the tunnel fired J.J. Moses? Like, when you think about J.J. Moses, it's the polar opposite. Like, personality-wise, it is the polar opposite of the guy who is now, we can say, is running things now. Bill O'Brien, the head coach and the general manager.
JJ was 5'6". I would imagine he still is 5'6". But as a player, he was 5'6". He was the shortest player in the NFL at one point.
Yeah, he's a great story.
And he's one of these guys. He's just very, very devoutly religious and everything. And but like, look, these things happen. It's just a matter of, all right, so it's one more position they have to replace. And typically what would happen is, okay, Bill O'Brien probably has a lot of guys in the organization still that were brought in by Rick Smith or Brian Gain, and O'Brien wants his own guy in there. Jack Easterby wants his own guy in there. Like, whatever cult Jack Easterby wants to create, then he's going to bring his own cult leader in for that.
I'm willing to wait and see what all these moves net. Like, some of it is these names of all these people. It's the quantity of the people, and people go, wow, look at all these people who are getting fired. And then you take a step back and you ask yourself, do I really know what these people were even doing in the building over there?
Yeah.
You know, like, they're making all these decisions, and I don't know what the job description or how good these people, like the administrative people on the scouting side. I think it's, you know, I hate that people are losing their jobs. I don't know what these people's jobs were. So for me to sit here and go, I can't believe so-and-so got fired when I'd never heard their name before yesterday. Like, I do think that O'Brien's, the feelings about O'Brien, and more O'Brien than Easterby, the feelings about O'Brien, the news yesterday that he is officially the general manager, which we all knew, and yet the designation that provides clarity got everybody all worked up. I'm just as nervous now. Even them giving him the title doesn't change my opinion about the direction of the team. I've been nervous since the season ended about the direction of the team. That didn't change it yesterday. It just validates something we already knew. I think when you see a bunch of people get fired like this, Seth, and it's O'Brien who's at the top of the thing, it doesn't matter who they could be firing popcorn vendors. They'd be like, why are they firing this popcorn vendor?
I wonder too, you know, like Amber Davies was let go too. And she's, I want to say she's been there. I get confused sometimes with front office staff, but she's an administrative assistant.
Right.
I'm always curious when those names hit the news. I don't know whether to feel bad or good for Amber Davies, but every exchange I've ever had, whether it's been very pleasant,
sure,
and she's been there a long, long time. It feels strange to put the name of an administrative assistant out there in the news.
You know what it feels like, Seth? This is what it feels like. Because you brought up a great point earlier in the hour, which is the way the Patriots had done things for years is that somebody gets the power to do things, or somebody gets more power, and then they have to prove to management, to the decision makers, that they are using, that they're executing this new job responsibility they have in a positive fashion, that they're moving the organization in the right way. And you can debate whether or not you think that's the case with Bill O'Brien as a general manager. The fact of the matter is, the guy who's making the decision, Cal McNair, feels that the organization is moving in that direction. So now, maybe, he's got the title, he's got the power, he now has the confidence of the owner, whether you feel it's justified or not, and I'm guessing a majority of the people don't. And as I said, I am nervous about it too. But the bottom line is, the person whose opinion matters is Cal McNair's. He has given Bill O'Brien that power. And this feels like, you know what it feels like, Seth? It feels like that one-year period that you're talking about is over. And now it's like, okay, guys, go ahead and do what you want to do.
Right, yeah.
And there's a whole lot of people at every level in the organization that get moved out so they can move new people in.
Yeah, and I guess that's where the Jack Easterby scenario is by far the most curious development maybe that I've ever heard of in the NFL. Like, this is a guy that was a team chaplain and was brought in to work with players, and that's what he was doing in New England, although he was working the same hours as coaches and scouts. And now he's going to be taking on a whole bunch of different roles, obviously, including personnel and his oversight over personnel, however that's divvied up.
Yeah, I think in conjunction with this title designation, Jack Easterby needs to speak. Jack Easterby needs to be a face that the fans can see now. He's not just some dude behind the scenes. He's Bill O'Brien's right-hand man. Even if it's a press conference where we just learn more about the guy, I think you have a lot of people brought in.
Do you think he was brought in for this specific job title?
I have no idea.
I don't know that
Bill O'Brien was brought in to be a general manager someday.
Right, did Bill O'Brien bring Jack Easterby in with this in mind, or did Jack Easterby finagle his way into this job?
Yeah.
There's a very Rasputin feel about Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
He's a holy man that all of a sudden finds himself as a trusted advisor to powerful people, and then all of a sudden starts perhaps actually calling the shots. And, like, how does that happen? Is that because he was identified as it, or is it because he's a really good pep talk guy?
Yeah.
This is what I fear out of coaches and team executives. Sometimes guys who are great at giving pep talks get jobs that they don't deserve because they're really good at giving a pep talk to an owner. An owner loves feeling, just to speak in general, not Cal McNair specifically, but there are owners who really just want to feel like, oh yeah, this is what I've seen in the movies. This is what a real football coach or real general manager is like. Hell yeah, let's go for it.
Or it's like Pavlov's dogs. You feel when that guy is around you and he's giving you a pep talk, How do you feel? You feel good. Seth, it's the endorphins. You know what I mean? Like, you know what? This guy is making me feel pretty good about the direction of things and very positive. It's like when people see likes on Facebook for their posts. It gives them the endorphins, man.
And it's not even just owners. I saw Gary Moeller pep talk his way into a defensive coordinator position. I was playing with the Jaguars. Gary Moeller, the old University of Michigan coach, had been in the NFL for a couple years coaching linebackers after he just, you know, got a little too drunk at a restaurant night and then drove home at 7 miles an hour, right, and the cops noticed. I feel like he should get some credit for being
overly cautious. At least it was 7 miles an hour, not 97.
Cautious about it, right. So, Gary, he got
this. Kids, don't drink and drive.
Moeller got this job. He got this job as defensive coordinator, and I would say a week into him being the defensive coordinator, it was very obvious that he had just given Tom Coughlin a really good pep talk about playing physical football, because that guy did not know hardly anything at all about, like, NFL defense. Right. It was astounding how little he knew as a defensive coordinator. And yet he talked Tom Coughlin, a very bright individual. He talked to him about, we're going to get in there and we're going to bash heads and we're going to be the best team out there. O'Brien went for it. Coughlin went for it. I feel like Jack Easterby is like the more pleasant version of that.
They're salespeople.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're salespeople and they're selling themselves. And that's why if we're saying anything, if Jack Easterby were to listen right now and think that you and I are saying anything that's unfair about him or inaccurate about the way he's gone about getting this position, that's why we need to hear from him. I feel like he's the mystery man.
Yeah,
this is
I'm not even reporting anything. I'm just saying this is how it feels.
Right.
This guy shows up out of nowhere as a character coach in New England to now all of a sudden he's sitting beside the dictator, O'Brien. It's really weird. Yeah. It's a strange scenario.
Yeah.
It's super goofy, man.
Yeah.
And so, yes, as a Texans fan, I'm a little bit nervous about it, that this is the guy that's calling the show. And that also, look, this is post-hoc reasoning, but Easterby shows up and heads start to roll.
Yeah.
All these people that have been in football forever are losing their jobs, which is fine. Look, the team needs to improve. Definition of insanity, all that crap. But how exactly has Easterby earned the right to do this? I'm curious.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a crazy scenario.
It is a crazy scenario. That's why I think the next step in this whole thing is Jack Easterby should do a press conference. I really feel it's appropriate for him to do an interview or speak to the media so people can learn more about who he is.
Now, to be clear, when I make the Rasputin comparison, it's not complete and total. Rasputin was into some funky stuff.
Yeah.
It was like all like weird, crazy adult themed parties and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right.
That was a whole different deal.
You're not putting that on
Easter. That was Russia.
Yeah.
He was a wandering mystic. He was just
like a gypsy?
No, not a gypsy, because a gypsy, you know, gypsies are actually like communities and everything.
Yeah.
He was just a wandering mystic that would just go and, you know, tell people spiritual truths.
Find his way into power.
And maybe give you a shoulder rub, and then whatever leads to whatever.
Next thing you know, you're running football ops.
Yada,
yada, yada, you're running football ops. So the other big news yesterday, which may have been a misfire, we'll see, is Dusty Baker as the next Astros manager. To be clear, if you're getting into your car, he is not the manager of the Astros today. It was reported yesterday by Bob Nightingale of USA Today, and also he is a radio.com MLB insider. He was on with John and Landry yesterday, right after the news broke. Nightingale reported the Houston Astros are about to choose Dusty Baker to be their next manager, according to a person familiar with the hiring, which can be a lot of people. The tone of Bob Nightingale's article would seem to indicate that it's somebody from the Dusty Baker side of all this.
It was funny. He's like, hey, did he know a bunch of people that were involved in the drug scandals in the 80s? Of course he did. Hey, did he owe $4 million to the IRS? Sure, but there was an explanation. This is the guy.
Yeah.
It was weird. He was trying his best to be even-handed, but very much every conclusion was that, Dusty Baker is definitely the guy. And he also included this would be the first good move the Astros organization has made. He didn't specify a timeline on that. He just said that this is the first. I didn't realize they'd been such a mess these past 5 years.
Right. This report of the Astros hiring a manager includes sentences like, this organization finally did something right.
Yeah.
Baker is the ideal man to get them through perhaps the most tumultuous time in an entire organization will face since the Black Sox scandal in 1919. Fans will taunt them every time they step to the plate, hearing chants of cheater, cheater, cheater. It will be relentless. Astros owner Jim Crane, realizing what lies ahead, had to find the man that would be best to insulate the clubhouse from the outside noise and threats, keeping them together. He chose Baker.
Boom.
Yeah. Well, and to be clear, we don't know that he's chosen Baker.
Right, we don't.
There are plenty of reports. There are more reports that they have not chosen Baker yet, and they're coming and actual reports coming from people who would know these things. They have not settled on Dusty Baker.
That's why
yet.
It feels a whole lot like this feels like the kind of thing that a job prospect might have gotten some very positive feedback from the hiring organization, but maybe a contract hasn't been completely agreed upon.
And he got on the phone and called somebody whose name is, I don't know, hypothetically, Bob.
Bob Dayengale.
And he said, hey, Bob Dayengale.
Yeah.
Guess what?
They've chosen me.
It's Busty Daker.
It's been reported as he was chosen. It didn't say hired.
Yeah.
So perhaps he was chosen, and yet there's this minor detail of the contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's because one side would say, hey, Dusty, you've been fired 4 times. You're 70 years old. Look, we're in the catbird seat here. And Dusty Baker will say, excuse me? I've got a prestigious career, and though I would like to get a World Series ring, this is not an easy situation I'm stepping into.
There are some numbers related to Dusty in the postseason that I think are going to scare some Astro fans.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost 10 straight closeout games of series. Not elimination games, but closeout games. There have been series where his team has been ahead, significantly ahead. He is 0-10 in his last 10 attempts at closing out a series.
A lot of people will diminish how much of an effect a manager has anymore in baseball. I would submit to you, let's think back to, okay, A.J. Hinch's decisions in Game 7.
Right.
Or let's go back and think back to when the Astros won against the Dodgers, and Yu Darvish stayed in seemingly forever. It felt like Yu Darvish pitched 18 innings that night, long after he should have been pulled. Managerial decisions matter in finite moments, and that's where people get a little bit nervous about Dusty Baker. Also, one of the other concerns about him is that he had a reputation of kind of pitching pitchers into the dirt. And 125 pitch counts and whatnot.
That was a big thing when he was with the Cubs early on with Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. He ruined those guys.
Yeah. So I most people say, okay, he's gotten over that. He's figured it out. The only thing I would worry about there is with Lance McCullers. Except Lance is represented by Boris. Boris does not let Tommy John guys get abused. He's proven that.
I had a buddy who was a Cubs fan, still is a Cubs fan, but was a Cubs fan in a season ticket holder when Dusty was coaching the Cubs. And he actually sent me an article yesterday about Dusty's use of pitchers in his last couple stops compared to when he was with the Cubs. That doesn't concern me anymore. Like, Dusty's overuse of pitchers is not a major concern to me, because you're right. Those are now in 2019, those are organizational decisions with certain guys. Those are things where Dusty's going to be handed an edict from upper management to say, hey, look, this is how you're going to use this guy. He's coming back from Tommy John.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.